Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, and this is a summer feature of The Sound of Economics, recorded on the road as part of the Reopening Europe project. We traveled more than 2,700 kilometers through the Netherlands, Germany, France, Austria, Slovenia, and Italy to collect voices from the ground between the 12th and the 27th of June, during the weeks when the borders were reopening after the COVID-19 lockdown.
And at one moment they closed off the borders.
Even the one with the salary, they lost the job.
Had to close the restaurant, so it was a little bit stressful.
Nous avons pu travailler avec les partenaires des différents pays.
Après pour vous, vous avez créé une vraie chiffre de bataille, non?
Finalement, ils ont réouvert les confini.
In this episode, we will unpack some reflections about borders and the pandemic, which we have collected along the journey of reopening Europe. And for this, I'm joined by Martina Tazzioli. Hi Martina, how are you?
Hi, hello. I'm fine, thank you.
Martina is a lecturer in politics and technology at the Goldsmith University of London. Her work is characterized by an interdisciplinary approach at the crossroad of political theory, migration and border studies and political geography. Recently, she has investigated the technologization of the border regime and how technologies constitute a battlefield for migrants, states and non-state actors. Martina, I imagine that during the lockdown and in the weeks immediately after, you've been quite busy solicited with questions about borders, right?
Yes, let's say that I've been thinking a lot about the political, ethical and economic consequences that this multiplication of border closure will have had and will have on European citizens, migrants, and on the very idea of Europe, because the pandemic has definitely fragmented the image of Europe as a smooth space of mobility. But in particular, more than on border closure as such, I've been trying to focus on migration as a lens for understanding how the pandemic has worked as an accelerator of differences, inequalities, and forms of abandonment within Europe. And on the other, how the pandemic has inaugurated new ways of justifying border closure and enacting controls. Just to give you an idea, in April 2020, Italy declared the country unsafe to the migrants who were drowning in the Mediterranean. So Italy closed the ports for protecting migrants at sea. So it's a quite interesting shift how this hygienic sanitary logic has been enforced for closing ports and with the excuse of protecting migrants from an unsafe country.
I would like actually, Martina, to make you listen some of the stories that we have collected along the way of our journey, and stories really from different borders and linked to daily life, the administrative issues that have been going on. I will mention the different people that you are going to listen to. A high school student that we met in Mersen, his name is Felis Zomerplak. And we met him a few kilometers from the Belgium-Dutch border, for example. We also met literally in a gas station on the motorway near the border with France. We met Juna Bernard, which is a member of the Luxembourgish parliament. We met in Dortmund. We went there and went into a printing workshop and met the owner, Stefan Albach, in Gorizia, Nova Gorica, really on the border between Italy and Slovenia. We met the mayor of Nova Gorica, Clement Miklavic. And you will hear at the end Jean-Baptiste Cousin, who is the head of the cross-border cooperation in the Grand Est region, whom we met in Strasbourg.
Like my high school is 25% Belgian, like 75% Dutch, because yeah. Borders don't exist. Like, and at one moment they closed off the borders, and we thought at the first moment, well, they say you couldn't cross the borders, but they really put like concrete blocks there, and people needed to take tests, because at one moment our schools were still open and the Belgian schools were closed in the Belgian border also. So what happened? People couldn't cross the borders to take tests or go to class. So that was a big problem. And then they gave like these letters writing like from our headmaster saying, well, you need to let them cross the border. But then At some places, they didn't even let people cross the border with these certificates.
We had the most issues when the borders closed down with the border between Germany and Luxembourg. And you have to know that in Luxembourg, there are hundred thousands of people who pass the border each day to work in Luxembourg. So we really depend, our whole economy, our whole society depends on workers coming from other countries into Luxembourg. And suddenly the borders were closed and those people had troubles to come in. So that was really an issue. Thinking of the health sector, where also we were affected by the coronavirus and most of our health care stuff were coming from France, from Belgium, from Germany, and they couldn't enter the country anymore. At least there was the worry that the other countries would keep the health workers for themselves. And then we would have definitely a big problem in Luxembourg. And so I think this whole notion of them belong to them and we are closed down and we depend on each other is really an issue that became very clear during the corona pandemic.
We prepared like 3 or 4 trucks with scooters, each truck 22 pallets, and we were ready to ship. And the border to Poland was open. You could move goods easily over over the borders within Europe. There was only the restriction was only put on the personal level, but the company that would receive the trucks in Poland and Wrocław, these companies were shut down completely, and they didn't have the people to unload the trucks. So everything was prepared on our level to be shipped. And we had to take some actions in order to store it somewhere else. And this is what we did. And these, like the pallets that were intended to be shipped on these trucks are still with us.
It was a moment where the governments of the two countries, especially the government of Slovenia, took the border as an instrument for resolving a problem. At this time was the spread of the virus in Italy that was faster and much more numerous, and the government of Ljubljana thought that closing the border would solve the problem, but they didn't think that the border here doesn't pass the mountains or forests, that the border here crosses the streets and the square. And what they did, they cut the lives, the daily lives of people. And the economy of the one single reality of two Goricas, Nova Gorica and Gorica.
At the beginning of March, suddenly, it was on a weekend, I began to get phone calls from the colleagues in Saarbrücken, in Stuttgart, who called me and said, okay, we may have a problem because we are getting some informations from Berlin, and it seems that some containment measures could be taken. In the following days, it went very, very quick, and then the issue was not anymore to prevail closing the border, but to ensure first a minimum of coordination between France and Germany, how to cope with the vital interest of people for which crossing the border is a must on a daily basis, so commuters. And the first point was to ensure that a minimum of information will be provided to people. German regulation thinks that crossing the border was allowed if you had triftige Gründe, so imperative reasons, which were sought not only for business, but also for family reasons. But it took weeks, step by step, to negotiate together with the lender and with the federal level in Germany and with the national level in France to establish common positions of all stakeholders in the region in order to move on, and have slowly some adaptations. And then to get, it was the second stage, beginning in, let's say, around the 10th of May, getting to a consensus where the lenders then retracted from the first position and said, okay, maybe it's not anymore so imperative to have the border closed, we have to reopen it. But then what we realized is that closing the border, it's very easy, but to reopen it, it's another issue.
So these were testimonies from the Netherlands, Luxembourg, Germany, Slovenia, and the border between France and Germany again in Strasbourg. What struck me a lot of time while we were asking was first of all, I mean, like the mayor of Nova Gorica saying the border used as a tool to solve a problem. Like the central government thought that the border was a tool to solve a problem. Martina, I would like to ask you, which are your first impressions from those tales from the borders?
Okay, so these testimonies are very interesting because definitely the pandemic has been an important change, in particular for people of my generation, the so-called Erasmus generation, as for the first time we have been confronted with borders within Europe. And at the same time, I was interested in listening to them because they are citizens from countries of Central Europe, mainly, apart from the Slovenian citizen. So definitely they have a different experience from other European citizens from Eastern European countries, for instance, for whom borders have always been a problem, something to cross, while for many of us, borders, in fact, didn't exist at all. At the same time, I think that this moment of multiple border closure that the people you interviewed stress and speak about could be seized as an opportunity for us to understand and bring to the fore the question of not only of border closure as such, but of the inequalities and the different ways in which borders impact on people. So I don't think that the only issues is to restore free mobility within Europe, but to understand that precisely because many of us have been affected and suffered and complain about this border closure, this could be a starting point for thinking about and for putting at the core of the European agenda how borders, the impacts of borders differs depending on the people. So I would like to shift attention from border closure as such to these inequalities of borders. And also I think the other important point that you raised in your question concerned this fake opposition that state mobilized and crafted between, on the one hand, freedom of movement and on the other, preservation of the public health system. So as if our movement could like impact and if you want, affect the good functioning of public health and the preservation of public health.
I've noticed, especially when I was in the border regions, like there is the Slovenian case is one example, but also the Strasbourg region. They are speaking about not only the material difficulties of the moment, but they mentioned the central state as somehow intervening into a situation where the border was something that was almost invisible, where there was cross-border cooperation was like a daily reality, either for commuters or either for administrative reasons and so on. Then all of a sudden, the presence of the state comes in and somehow it changes totally the dynamic at local level. What do you make out of this, you know, especially in the context of the EU, where we were not used to have such an intervention when it came to the border regions for so long time, especially in the Schengen area?
Yeah, absolutely. I also had the same impression being based in the UK during the lockdown and with my mind in Italy at the same time. So the fact that we were keeping attention, drawing attention every single day to what every state deciding about new rules to be implemented and how some citizen or some categories of among the citizen could be excluded from the access to certain services. So definitely there has been, we felt again the centrality of the state, even if again, I think is as a follow-up to my previous answer, I think is something that we as Europeans and Europeans from Central Europe experience, but this presence of the state at the border has never gone, even before the pandemic. So I don't see this as a radical shift. I see this as a radical shift for a certain segment of the population. So again, since I work on migration, I can observe how the presence of the state is so crucial at certain frontiers. And is far, this idea of an Europeanization of borders is very far, right, in many contexts.
Well, this reminds me of a conversation I had along the way in Florence with Michael Lee, a senior fellow at Bruegel and a professor at the Johns Hopkins University.
In Europe, we have the luxury to think that a border is something mainly in your mind. We both studied political science. I studied political philosophy. I remember the sentence at one stage, where is a fact? And my professor at Oxford said, a fact is in your mind, nowhere else. And we've had the luxury in Europe that borders have been a sort of mental concept ever since the Schengen system was established. So what we've seen during COVID-19 is that from being purely an intellectual concept, borders have been reestablished. And young people who have never known the experience of stopping at borders, having to show passports, having to prove that one has the right to travel across, this has come back. So the question is whether this is merely temporary and that borders will remain within Europe anyway, a memory or an intellectual concept, or whether actually we're back to something like the world before COVID-19, before the European Union, when each country is going to draw in on itself and is going to insist on the importance of national borders.
Yeah, I think he raised a super interesting point, this question of temporariness of exceptional measure that actually, on the one hand, will be extended in time. Today, Italy, the Italian government declared that the state of emergency will be extended until the end of the year, until the end of December. And at the same time, beyond this temporal extension, there is this question of to what extent this measure will remain in place anyway, not only because of the will of the governments, but also because on a more, if you want, even on a more, on a deeper level, how this measure have been interiorized by many citizens, by many of us, as measure for supporting public health and the common good, right? So apart from surveillance system and policing mechanism, I think is even more interesting to observe the proliferation of certain way of behaving and how citizens accepted to act according to some norms that have been promoted and suggested and in many cases also enforced and obliged by the states, such as keeping social distance, putting a mask, but also observing the others, controlling the others. So this is what I call peer-to-peer subjection. So this interiorization of the norms, which is also about controlling not only being self-disciplined, but also looking at the other citizen and check if they were really following, complying with the rules in the name of this collective responsibility and on a more individual level of acting as a responsible citizen. So this question of the mental border that he discussed, I think, can be framed also in this way.
Yeah, I also think that when he speaks about the mental border and the experience of the border, you put it also early on, and there was a part of the population that totally never lived the border as something that was physical, but that it was more a theoretical line on the map, while other groups of population continued to live the borders as real physical obstacles. And let me share with you another testimony, actually, from the Lake Constance at the border between Germany and Switzerland. We met with Minia Jonek, a member of the liberal Jewish community of Constance.
Well, I think a border is a place where you need to, you go from one political system to the next political system, and you normally you have to show your identity cards or to tell the other political system, to show the other political system that you have identity cards or passports. And if these identity cards or passports are acceptable to the other political system, they let you in easily. If not, you're in a bad position, as Jews were in the war, or as people who need to flee now.
Martina, what do you think about what she says?
The testimony is key to understand this differentiation in terms of access to the territories and in terms of how border impacts on the population and on this difference between citizen and non-citizen. And I think apart from the question of identity raised in this comments, in this question, is also interesting to observe how borders have multiplied also among citizens, and in particular in the urban context. For instance, I, as I said, I was based in London during the lockdown, and that was very visible how the pandemic has highlighted and accelerated inequalities among British citizens and between citizen and non-citizen in terms not only of border crossing, but also in terms of access to public health and to care, enforcing more and more a certain kind of hostile environment towards some citizens and some politics of abandonment towards others. So there have been many inquiries in the UK regarding the differential treatment and the racializing politics enacted towards BMA, so towards people of Black and Asian origins. So the question of identities is crisscrossed in our present, I think, also with other kind of factors which concern this differential access to services and rights within the countries as such.
Yes, indeed. And this is also something that we experienced in the traveling. The more we were going farther away from the administrative border, the exploration of the concept of border became slightly different. And the way people lived border during the lockdown was exactly reflecting what you were saying, like within an urban context, or within your own environment, being locked down in your own apartment, the concept of public-private, the concept of border became totally different life experience than the one that we are used to think about it. I mean, geographers are quite used to as well think about borders in a more broader sense than just the state centric approach to this. And this was also what at the end of our trip we ended up in Napoli, in Naples, and we met with Ugo Rossi, who is an urban geographer. And he had quite an interesting reflection exactly on this aspect, and I would like to share it with you.
Well, the border, of course, is typically between nations, between states, but there are many borders in our cities, and usually the typical border in our cities is between private space and public space. You know, especially in the bourgeois Western city, is this the boundary between the private and the public is key to the urban experience in Western capitalist city. In Naples, there is a famous essay by the German intellectual intellectual who spent some time here, Walter Benjamin, in the early 20th century. He wrote about Naples as a porous city, as porosity, as the fact that there is no such a border between the private space and the public space in a city, a southern city like Naples, but the same can be said perhaps about all southern cities. So the preservation of this non-border zone between the private space where people live, their domestic space, and the public space, I think is key to the survival of the social character of, to the perseverance of southern cities like Naples.
I very much agree with Ugo Rossi on this, on the way in which the pandemic has, if you want, accelerated this differentiation between the public and the private space. And indeed, this is true in the city, and this is true also regarding the access to public services. So, for instance, in the UK, but also in Italy, this will be an accelerator of way for discriminating and channeling, producing differential channels of way of accessing public services and the quality of these. Just, I don't know, a very simple example in Italy now. If you go to the beach and you want to, you cannot afford to pay. Paradoxically, you are in a super crowded space in the time of the pandemic because they left the biggest part of the beach to the private beach in the name of providing safe space for those who can afford. So to provide a space where people can keep social distance. Unavoidably in the free beach, people have to put themselves at risk, if you want, and be exposed to the virus, or they need to stay home if they are like vulnerable people. And I think that overall, indeed, this question of, this articulation of class and race in the time of the pandemic, and how it is reverberated in these differences between public and private space, has given rise recently to this this ambivalent movement of, on the one hand, incarceration of some part of the population, and on the other, of expulsion, of containment, of prevention. I mean, hampering people from accessing rights and spaces as well. By incarceration, I mean, I don't know, in Greece, for instance, it has been very glaring how the Greek population has been treated very differently from refugees. So refugees are currently still in lockdown and will be in lockdown until July 20th, while the Greeks have left the lockdown in early May.
Thanks, Martina. And indeed, this differential treatment in Greece points out to the big issue of borders and migration during the lockdown. During the road trip of Reopening Europe, we called from the car Jeanette Newman, Bloomberg correspondent in Madrid, and we asked her how the pandemic had been impacting on the arrivals from Morocco.
Well, in one kind of key crossing for immigrants and migrants to get into Spain, which is at the southern Spanish border. It's the right across the Strait of Gibraltar, right? So it's where Europe and Africa meet. That's a key crossing for a lot of migrants and refugees. And the numbers there have slowed down. And the reason is actually really interesting about why there are fewer migrants crossing or were crossing during the confinement. And the reason is actually because Morocco itself had a very, very strict lockdown. And what that meant is that a lot of migrants from sub-Saharan Africa, so who kind of move up through Africa to Morocco, and then they wait in Morocco to cross over into Spain and the rest of Europe. Many of those migrants are still in Morocco because of the lockdown. They're unable to go out and work and get money to then pay the human traffickers who would bring them across from Morocco into Spain.
You've been investigating specifically refugees and migrants, so maybe you can tell us a little bit more about that specific aspect, which unfortunately we couldn't explore as much as we would have liked to explore during our trip for the limitations of the time and space that we had.
First of all, as I mentioned at the very beginning, there have been a series of measures enforced by states such as Malta and Italy to keep migrants away from Europe. So border closure, that was something that Italy enforced already in 2017 and then in 2018 again. But now port closure has been justified in the name of COVID. So it's been accepted, if you want, by the population much more than before, with no opposition. And secondly, beyond this firm border closure in the name of COVID, could observe, and during COVID-19, the internal frontiers of Europe, the number of pushback, for instance, at the border between France and Italy, have increased. And the procedure, the administrative procedure for pushing people back, has become more and more arbitrary. I was at the border last week in the city of Ventimiglia, and the French police is pushing migrants back without interviewing them, without providing any translation, and by putting on this refus d'entrée, which is the paper that the migrants receive when they are pushed back by the France, no signature due to COVID-19. So they don't ask migrants to sign this paper to confirm that they have been pushed back, with the excuse that there is COVID-19, so they cannot take a pen to sign. This is a very small detail, but that has a lot of consequences for the lives of the migrants, because a lawyer is more difficult to account for border controls and for border or for human rights violation. And then, just as a final point, in many states, such as in Greece, this will be an opportunity to implement new digital technologies that will create further distance between the humanitarian actors and the migrants. So now, during the pandemic, the possibility to apply for asylum has been restricted. So many countries suspended the possibility to apply for asylum, while the number of migrants didn't decrease a lot. So migrants were still arriving. And at the same time, they introduced new way for when the lockdown ended in many countries, to apply for asylum and to be in touch with humanitarian actors only digitally. So it's more and more difficult for migrants to have a relationship and to also to contest some decisions.
Mm. Well, that is absolutely interesting, and also makes somehow a lot of questions about the fact that if we are seeing a gradual reopening of the borders, at least on certain levels, COVID-19 is continuing to have perhaps some more long-lasting impact on borders as such. I have the feeling that this is just the beginning of a conversation that would have to be continued and checked and monitored in the next few months, when we're going to really understand a little bit better, beside the initial shock and also the initial measures, how some stuff are going to be permanently affecting the border regime in Europe, and which are the other things that were actually temporary measures which were set in place just for the health emergency. At least this is my impression. I don't know if you agree with
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And I think that, as also Hugo was mentioning in his comment, so this will be an opportunity for states, but also for private actors to put in place and to enforce some technological borders as well. So in this sense, private borders.
Yeah, indeed. In any case, we are going to continue those conversations and the reflection around all the different voices and testimonies and stories that we collected along the road of reopening Europe in this series of podcasts that are dedicated to this over the summer of The Sound of Economics. And I would like to thank you, Martina, for your time, and would like to remind all our listeners that they can find more podcasts, video and information about our road trip on the website www.reopeningeurope.com. And on the 2nd of September, during Bruegel annual meetings, we will launch a documentary from Reopening Europe. And you can keep up to date with the launch and the program of the annual meetings on the website www.bam.bruegel.org. Thank you for tuning in to The Sound of Economics. Until next time, bye-bye.